T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on The Score.
This hour on The Score brought to you by CarX Tire and Auto. Stu Grimson from the NHL Network will join us in about 40 minutes.
Oh, what a great name for a nickname for an NHL tough guy. The Grim Reaper.
That's
was
good.
What the Second Balcony Rats used to refer to good old number 23 as. It was really cool. He was in the studio with Spiegs and me a few years ago. We're going to talk to him via telephone today, but looking forward to that. And looking through the texts we've been receiving over the last 15 minutes or so.
Yeah.
I understand what some of you are suggesting regarding ACLs, but to simply dismiss them as though they're like, you know, a mosquito bite is just simply delusional on your part. Yes, athletes have been coming back from them more regularly, and sometimes a couple of knee injuries, a couple of ACL reconstructions. Freaking Frank Gore is 35 years old, and he's had his knee rebuilt a couple of times, and he keeps going. But don't think for a second there aren't ramifications that come with that.
And this audience should know Derrick Rose.
Yes.
It is the number one example.
They come back regularly, and there is the additional later in life problems with arthritis that are horrible. It's not going to cost you maybe as a kid in your 20s as much, but down the road, that's something to think about. Don't treat an ACL like it's the common cold. It's much more than that. I'm surprised by some of these reactions.
Yeah, and listen, normally, you know, I'm making a basketball-football distinction here in terms of risk of injury, and obviously whatever a doctor says. If a doctor said, hey, your knee's not stable, you are 20% more likely to tear your ACL if you play, then obviously don't play. Shut it down. I am saying if he gets 100% medically cleared, I would not find it to be reckless for him to play basketball, because last night was a total freak occurrence. A shoe literally exploded. And I think that if that shoe exploding actually would have been torn ACL,
mm-hmm.
I still think Zion Williamson sets a record shoe deal and is the number one pick in the NBA draft.
Right,
so
right.
I actually don't think he, in this case, is risking that much, but
okay.
it's totally his call.
I don't know if this 708 texter is calling me a jerk or you a jerk. I think it's at me. He's a 12-time intramural champion, and he can tell us that there is glory in intramural championships.
I hope he's being sarcastic.
Sure. No, not with a jerk sign-off. You know, I'm sure he's not him saying signed jerk. I'm sure he's calling one of us jerk. I'm guessing it's me.
Either one.
Because I'm dismissing.
I'm sure Trevor Lawrence looks at his intramural basketball title at Clemson and is like, finally, the championship I was looking for.
It's going to go right between my national championship MVP and my Heisman Trophy, my intramural championship.
I'd like to spend the next few minutes, if you guys don't mind, doing, I guess the best way to describe this would be an amendment to Can't Do It. Not necessarily yesterday's Can't Do It, but there is something I do want to address. Like you, I have friends from high school with whom I still congregate on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Tonight's our night. We usually hit it out on Thursday nights. Very few of them are sports radio consumers, but my one buddy, who 2 years older than I am, a football guy, although baseball is his favorite sport, he's the White Sox season ticket holder who I'm trying to help out a half a dozen times a year unload his unwanted product. He sends me a text last night at 7 o'clock, and I'm just pulling in the driveway, and he said, I just heard Rick Hahn on with Lawrence Holmes. How come he wasn't on with you guys? And there is an answer for that, and the answer is simple. Put the White Sox on the list of organizations in town who have a philosophical difference with our show. And I told him, he said, who'd you piss off? And I said, no, I pissed off John Paxson a few weeks ago. And Danny had a lot to do with that, too. And that's a relationship that I'm hoping gets better. And, you know, all parties, I think, in time are wanting it to get better. I know that's the case with Parkins. That's the case with me. And I'm pretty sure that's the case with John. So down the road, hopefully that situation gets cleaned up and we can resume having occasional conversations with him. But somebody in the White Sox organization thought it would be best if Lawrence did the interview. And my buddy says, how do you feel about that? And I said, I feel fine. I'm on the 16th tee box of this here job history, and it is not my intention to play the final three holes on my knees for anybody. And if there are people who feel we have been unfair, me or you or the show, I am always available for those conversations to talk it out rationally and calmly and with the goal being resolution. And I'm optimistic that's going to be the case in this particular instance. But yeah, we're my 32-year-old partner and I got some fences to mend, got some bridges to repair, and we'll do it or we won't.
Yeah.
One of the two.
One of the two.
I'll do it. It will be an effort on my part that is 100% sincere. But for anything that we have put on the air or any behaviors we have out in our lives away from here, there is nothing for which I need to apologize, and I don't think there is for you, unless I'm missing something.
No, that is the that's the operative word, right? So that was somewhat news to me. I suppose had my suspicions, but I will say that it doesn't bother me like a lot of people seem to think it maybe should. And I don't say that with any arrogance or anything. Like, you know what I mean? You're on the 16th tee. I'm on the, fourth, fifth? Like, I got a long time left in this business. So I'm not looking to napalm any bridge. And I've taken great pride. And I don't like to name call or make it personal, ever. I mean, the Uber ad, please make this personal. I mean, I do that. You know, I mean, please.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I enjoy that.
Obviously.
Do it again today if you happen to be tired at 5 o'clock.
Okay, sounds good. Please make that personal.
Please make this personal.
That's right. But I...
Tell him your name, Sencha.
Make this personal.
It's going to be an all-timer for me. I hope I have a long career where I have enough all-timers.
Save your gold.
That's right. But so I am more than open to conversations with anyone who thinks that any of us might be uninformed, unfair, inappropriate, anything along those lines, totally fine for it. If the expectation is apology, it might be, if I come to realize that something that anyone did is worthy of an apology, absolutely. I apologize all the time. You and I have apologized both to each other about separate things in the last like 10 days. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's not like I have no problem actually saying, I'm sorry. It's just, I want to earn it or I want it to be earned. And so, but I also think that you and I come from the same cloth in this way, and we had talked about this with callers, though I loved our caller show after the Machado news a couple days ago, is that I always loved radio for the show, the people. So mm-hmm. for this show, that would be you and me and Shep and Tanny. And everything else is a bonus to me. Players, writers,
clubhouse,
you know what I mean? Like,
gout.
Any of that stuff. So like, that's just how I personally consume radio. Other people don't. They want 7 interviews in a show. Mm-hmm. Cool. Totally fine. Different strokes for different folks. Some people want 100 callers. Okay. Totally fine. Different strokes for different folks. But you and me are kind of cut from that same cloth, which is why I think this is working. And so like, I don't feel like we need guests. I love doing 5-hour shows with one or no guests if that's what the day calls for. And also, And I know that that's not what you're saying this situation is, but you mentioned the Paxson situation. I listened back to that. I've had many media members, including ones who know John Paxson well, on the Bulls beat, saying, you weren't unfair. So as long as I'm being fair and representing what I believe to be a true point of view and being a conduit for fans, well, then I think, personally, you can go places that it'll be a soft landing spot. And it doesn't have to be, to use his words, an interrogation. And I still disagree with the characterization. But you, if you face tough questions and come out of them looking well, you score way more points with your consumer, your fan base, your customers than if you get lobbed some softballs. And Lawrence, by the way, did not do that at all. So I'm talking about the Paxson situation.
Right.
Lawrence, I thought, has a great relationship with the White Sox and is a White Sox season ticket holder. And that was at a totally appropriate place for that interview to take place. Would I have loved to do it? Obviously. But I thought Lawrence did a great job, and I thought Rick Hahn came across really well in that interview. And I've said as much about Rick Hahn on the air many times. I think he does, you know, he's not Theo and Jed, but nobody in the sport is, especially in my heart. But he does a really good job of conveying.
He apologized to Theo Epstein that Rick Hahn's name was mentioned in the same sentence.
But if Theo and Jed weren't here, I said this when we were talking about it, Rick Hahn is the next best, I think, him and John McDonough at truly communicating their message. But I'm not going to not ask what people would say are like tough, and I'm using air quotes there, or confrontation. It's freaking sports. If you get the president title and the 2-comma salary and run organizations that have millions upon millions of fans, you should be able to answer questions about A, B, C, D, other thing without it turning into anger, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't want to come on and face those types of questions occasionally, fine. Like, that was the thing with Pax. We had a great conversation about fatherhood and his child entering the military. You know what I mean? So, like, it's not like every time it's some sort of assault or interrogation or anything like that.
Right.
But I'm just saying that, like, if we have a difference of opinion on something, I'm all for sitting down for a cup of coffee and a meeting of the minds.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I'm hopeful will happen. And I can preemptively suggest to all of the callers who are already putting 4 o'clock for next Wednesday in their phones something to do. Call can't do it. You'd be wasting your time, because this is as far as I'm willing to go. And it's I have not been willing to go much further. In conversations I've had with our guys off the air, with Danny, with Shep, with Tanny, I'm not going to defy confidences I have with some people I've known for many years in both organizations. I said this about the Paxson stuff. The weekend that followed was bittersweet for me. It was sweet because, you know, it drew a ton of attention to the show and to the radio station, and it was really good sports radio. It was juicy. It was emotional. The bitterness comes from, a relationship. Calling it a friendship is a stretch, but a fond acquaintance of many, many years has been injured, and I thought at the time potentially permanently injured, and John and I are going to get together soon, and it's not permanently injured, and I feel good about that. And I think when his career as Bulls vice president has written its final chapter, and he steps away from it for a little while, John is not a dumb guy, and John understands this business of media way more than most, because he's worn the headphones before. I'm pretty convinced that he will reflect on what happened a couple of weeks ago and ask himself, what was all the fuss about? Why did I react that way? He and I had a conversation off the air 11 years ago, and he was screaming at me on the phone when I was up the dial, and I said, John, don't look now, but you're sounding just like Jerry did. Because, you know, John was a player on those teams when Jerry Krause, the general manager, couldn't handle any word said negatively about his organization. And I am hopeful for his mental health. And I told him, I said, look, this what's important to me is that you are at peace. What would mean more to me is if your son Ryan and the pals whom he calls his brothers in the Marine Corps are done with their service time without a scratch. That matters more to me knowing you than if the Bulls ever win a damn division title. I don't really care all that much about it. And I hope time arrives when everybody can get together and guys can shake hands and agree to disagree on something, but do it in a manner where we can continue our relationships with these guys. And I'm not going to talk about any of the specifics of any of it within the Sox organization, but yes, working with you, Danny, has some after-hours obligations.
Oh, there's the finger point.
I am in the conflict resolution business.
There's the finger point.
Second time in as many weeks. Oh, wow. I welcome it. I promise you, I welcome it.
I'm checking your math on that. Yes, I got the same thing.
Skill I didn't possess when I was your age.
Was it Parkins? Was it Mac? Was it Mac? Was it Parkins?
Well, with John, it was,
I'm just messing with
80%.
You. 80%.
88%?
You should listen back to the questions. You asked some good ones.
Yeah.
Oh,
when I was your age, I had no interest in conflict resolution. I'm right and he's wrong. And I'll put my flag in the ground and fight.
I don't think that sports have to be like that.
Yeah, but I was that way.
Yeah.
And I didn't care. If your feelings are hurt along the way, so what? And to a large degree, I still feel that way. But I'm always, more now the last, I don't know how many years, more interested in trying to, can we all just get along? That sort of thing.
That's nice.
It's not life and death. And sometimes people treat their jobs like they're life and death. And, I know when you're in the middle of it and John's in the middle of another rebuild, how many is, collar's tight. He's not been the same guy these last 10 years. And I shared that with him. I said, I wish you would have never hung up the headphones. For you, I wish that. And so anyway.
All right.
Just wanted to share that.
No, I certainly appreciate it. Dan McNeil, the fence builder, or no, the bridge builder.
Yeah,
fences get mended.
Yes.
And metaphors, horses and water.
You know, they always say, Danny always says it, you can mend 1,000 fences.
And you build one bridge.
Yeah. The gap bridge.
Yeah, build that bridge and then Connor's horses are walking to the Kentucky Derby because they can't fly.
And then Texter's appropriately calling me out, Parker, you don't even drink coffee. Yeah, we can get caramels. It's just as arbitrary as coffee.
It is. Have a bunch of caramels. What? What are you talking about?
Stu Grimson at 3:40. We will react to Lawrence and Rickon's conversation at some point. I thought there was some really good stuff in there. It's McNeil and Parkins on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
Bottom of the hour on the Score, brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Don't miss Coach Collins and the Cats at the new Welch Ryan Arena this season for games against Minnesota and Ohio State. Tickets on sale now at nusports.com. Stu Grimson will talk Hawks, their playoff chances, Patrick Kane's MVP candidacy, and more with us in 15 minutes. He works at the NHL Network. Story in the news today that is hitting a little close to home, and in some ways very close to home, is the story about Jim Boeheim, Syracuse basketball coach, who, driving home from the game against Louisville last night, he's driving, so after 11 o'clock, he's driving on 690, the highway that goes around downtown Syracuse, and snowy conditions, and there's a car off to the side of the road that had been in an accident. There's a guy standing in the road, reacting to the accident, getting out of the car. Guy in his 30s, Jim Boeheim hit him, and he killed him.
Killed him.
And it is, though I've driven those roads hundreds, if not thousands of times, and in those conditions, and Jim Boeheim's been at Syracuse for 50 years of his life, so he's driven them tens of thousands of times. And you see these stories, and you immediately think, at least I do, the cynic in you, was he drinking, right? Did something happen? And I will just say, this is not as a defensive him or anything like that. known. Boeheim does not drink.
Officers at the scene said there was no reason to conduct field sobriety tests for anybody. There was no suspicion of intoxication. Those who were at the scene of the accident all seemed to be
wasn't speeding.
And right. It seemed to be one of those, and there aren't many where there is a no fault, but it appears that no fault is going to wind up being the insurance company's evaluation and the police investigation.
We'll see. And I get the cynicism of he's the most powerful guy in that city. And so you see something that comes out and says, oh, no breathalyzer test. I think it said that he passed the breathalyzer test. I thought that's how I read it. Not that it wasn't administered.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but that's how I had read it. But maybe I could... Maybe I'm incorrect, but I believe sobriety and alcohol sensor tests were performed on Boeheim.
Okay, I got bad information on a sports radio show. Yeah. Imagine that.
Were performed on, I thought I had that right, on the driver of the other vehicle, and they came back negative, police said in a statement. Now, I get it. Like, Boeheim's the most powerful guy in that city.
Sure.
Or people covering for him and all that. Boeheim doesn't drink. And I don't know if he used to drink wine, but
drinking's one way to get intoxicated.
Yeah, true. And okay, I can't speak to anything else. That is 100% true. But in terms of a field sobriety test for a BAC level or anything like that, doesn't drink. But you've been talking a lot about texting and driving and the dangers of it. I was just thinking, like, man, that guy, those roads, all the times that he had done it, completely sober. And one time, you're 74 years old, you just had this huge win, you're about to play Duke, national TV, you're going to set the attendance record, biggest game of the year, and you kill a guy.
Well,
your life can change in a second.
Sadly, the deceased did not make a good decision by standing in the middle of an icy road under those conditions. I mean, that's the best thing you can do. And you know, I had firsthand experience go driving off of an icy road and seeing several cars follow suit while I was waiting for a wrecker. One car came down the hill and flipped several times. A woman came through the sunroof of this vehicle many years ago going back to school. The last place you want to be on an icy road is near it. You get off the road to the very best of your ability. You don't want to be near that road.
Those roads are dangerous.
You can't control your slide. You know, don't go on the road.
Yeah, oh, no, absolutely. And it was... And I know people have a lot of opinions on Boeheim, and some of them are justified.
I've not heard – I've never met Jim Boeheim, but it was a Boers. Boers had been around him. He was Mr. College Basketball. He thought he was a complete tool.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting to me. Boeheim is a tough nut to crack. He definitely takes a while to get him to trust you a little bit. And so, like, newcomers were not the easiest thing.
Is he a trophy wife guy?
Well, he's on his second wife. She's much younger,
okay,
but they've been together.
Not number three. He doesn't discard him every 20 years and find another newer model?
No.
I'm pretty sure that was a reputation he had.
Well, when him and Julie got together for the first time, because she was much younger and she is a beautiful woman, he definitely wore that reputation.
Yeah, and it's not fair if it's just one time through.
No, and they have young kids, and she is an amazing woman and unbelievable. She runs their leg or their arm of the Coaches Versus Cancer. He's one of the board members of that and raises millions and millions and millions of dollars for charity. And yeah, she always gets talked about on the broadcast as changing his style and keeping him young and softening his edges a little bit. I will say, you know, for me, him and I had run-ins a few times, but
you should have called me. I could have helped.
But yeah, no kidding. But you know what? He did any Syracuse broadcast student who did anything there had their run-ins with Boeheim, and he talks about it openly. He has open practices to the media, not for 10 minutes at the beginning, not for 10 minutes at the end, full open practice for the beat writer for the Syracuse Post-Standard, Mike Waters, who's been there 30 years, and for the student radio reporter. And you can come in, you can watch, you can ask him questions, he'll challenge you, and if he thinks that you asked a dumb question, he'll say it. And he says, this basketball program is a big recruiter for the university and the journalism school.
That's the right way to approach it.
And so he treats the student journalists like they are professional journalists.
You want to interview the big boys? You're a big boy.
That's how he treats
it. I'm okay with that.
And it's intimidating, and you learn things. But he'll come on your college radio show. But Boeheim, what he is sensitive to criticism. And he has...
This will be the theme for the show today.
When does he take over for the Bulls?
He's got an ear to the ground. Boeheim...
And I'm saying all this thing because I don't give a...
Boeheim, on more than one occasion, this was not when I was a student doing the postgame show, but when I was working there the year after school, I was doing noon to two, and then I would do Syracuse basketball postgame.
Mm-hmm.
Since it was the professional station, so even though he knew I'm 23 years old and a year out of school, and we used to spar a little bit when I was a student reporter, and he knew me, he called in. He didn't know how much I was making, but I was making $9 an hour. But he would listen to the postgame show, and if he thought I was saying something stupid, he'd call into the show and defend.
That's great.
It was amazing. And he said to me, I'll never forget it.
We should call him today.
Probably
not a good day.
Well, I made a mistake the last time there was a big scandal, and I called him, and I was working in Kansas City. I was like, you know what? It would be a huge. Yeah, I was stupid. I was 24. It's like it was after the Bernie Fine, you know, his longtime trusted assistant
and the
sexual questions that were coming in, questions of abuse and all that. And we were in a post Sandusky world, and we didn't know that the Bernie Fine stuff was really messy, but it was in no way Sandusky, but we didn't know. And I was like, man, it's my job to call Jim Boeheim. You know what I mean? It really wasn't, but I was like, I'm going to do it. I called him. He answered the phone, said who it was, didn't have my number saved. And I go, you know, Jim, it's Danny Parkins. I'm in Kansas City, and obviously there's a lot of news going on. I'm just wondering if you had any comments or you'd want to talk. He goes, Danny, why the F do you think I'd want to talk to you today? And he hung up the phone, and then like 5 minutes later, he texted me, and he was like, sorry, I know you're just doing your job. No hard feelings. It's not personal, but no comment. I was like, okay. Uh-huh. But
please make this personal.
It was nice. He recognized he was bagging.
In hindsight, it would have been ridiculous to think that he was going to give me the first comment after the Bernie Fine scandal.
Oh, you got to go for it, though.
Instead of
Tirico
or Adam Schein or anyone else.
Hey, if you want preferential treating at KC Masterpiece in Kansas City at the age of 24, one way to ensure it is getting Jim Boeheim on your sports yakker when Q's impropriety is the headline.
Yeah, hey, I tried to call him, but someone says, is this related to the scandal? No, Max said that he had heard from Boers that he was back.
Not just Terry, that's been a reputation. He's very coarse and curt.
He's tough.
Almost aggressive, almost like he looks for guys to jump at when he does news conferences.
Yeah, does he rank?
He's confrontational. Challenge me and I'll challenge you. Like he is very confrontational.
How glowing is he? Like, are we talking Theo levels here? Are we talking the levels of less? Where is Boeheim on the glowing matter for you?
Listen, I'm a fan, and I'm biased, and I'll admit that, and I think that he's underrated as a coach because I don't think that people fully understand
who's underrating Jim Boeheim. He's a Hall of Fame coach with a national title. Who's underrating Jim Boeheim?
I think he's underrated
because he's not quite Mike Krzyzewski?
I don't think anyone considers him on that level of an actual coach. And some of the things...
He's a legend.
Why I think he's underrated is because he only has the one title. And the thing that I think is underrated about him is that people don't have a full grasp of how much of a hellhole Syracuse, New York is.
Well, it's a ton of college towns.
It's not.
Yes, it is.
It's not. Because it's in the
Is Durham, North Durham, Carolina, North Carolina special? A panacea for anybody?
It's warm. That's a huge difference. Syracuse, New York gets more snowfall than any place that's not like in the mountains in elevation in this country. And it's 4 hours from any big city. And he gets...
It's warm. Durham is warm, but it's also in the south. You don't need a jacket if you run around with your hood on and only a sheet over you at night. I would think that's possibly a turnoff for some college kids if they're of color.
Of course. I mean, that's an imagery that, absolutely, I would never claim that racist incidents happen everywhere, north and south.
I know, but the south still has a reputation that scares people.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just saying that you talk about Storrs, Connecticut, Durham, North Carolina, Lawrence, Kansas, Bloomington, like you talk about these like college town places where big time programs have been built. they don't have the weather component and the distance from a major metropolitan area that Syracuse does.
So, how far is East Lansing from Detroit? 2 hours, 2.5 hours? I really don't know.
Not even two. No. I think it's around two.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, it is in the middle of nowhere with hellacious snow, and he gets kids.
You're right. It's not an attractive destination.
There's no reason for it to be a basketball powerhouse. And he built that program in the middle of nowhere into one. And by the way, I think that when he leaves, it might totally fall apart. Like, I think that that's absolutely in play. And so that to me is the singular nature of what he's done. Whereas I think Duke recruits itself. Carolina, by and large, recruits itself. Kansas has been proven to recruit itself. And I think Syracuse could easily fall apart as a basketball school when he's done. We can get back to this at some point if you want.
Yeah, but there's more on texting and driving and device use that's worth getting into
and
here.
All that stuff.
One show at a time, affecting change, Parkins.
Stu Grimson next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
And Larmer will get a few passes, I'm sure, too. Marchmont took a run at Wendell Clark. Clark hacked at it, now he wants it. And Steve Smith is wrestling with Clark. This will draw everyone into this fray. Stu Grimson's on the ice, trying to get at Clark from behind.
And Grimson's going to get himself into big trouble.
You bet. He's going to be in big trouble if he starts manhandling Merrowelli. Very close to the abusive officials category. At the bottom of this pile is Wendell Clark. That's who Grimson wants. There's Grimson trying to get loose, and now he's gone crazy. This is a man gone mad.
A man gone mad.
Let me tell you something. Wendell Clark was one tough SOB, the Maple Leafs' longtime captain. But if Stu Grimson wants a piece of you, the best place to be is at the bottom of the pile so he can't get at you.
Stu Grimson joins us now, where you could watch him on the NHL tonight, 5 o'clock Central this evening. Plus, NHL Network will have extensive trade deadline coverage Monday beginning at 7 a.m. Central. Visit NHLNetwork.com for your local channel listings.
In the early days of this radio station, he was a frequent contributor, always happy to talk hockey and things that happen in hockey games with good old number 23, the Grim Reaper, Stu Grimson, with us on The Score. How are you, man?
I'm great, guys. I'm great. How are you? You know, it's kind of funny looking back, listening to that broadcast being replayed. I often marvel at the insight of those two broadcasters. I don't know who those guys were, but they had a pretty good feel for what was going on. Very accurate insight. The man had gone mad, and it was surely abusive official to the tune of 10 games suspension.
Oh, that's great. You know, Stu, it's great to catch up with you, and there's a local buzz here that has begun to build with the Hawks turning things around, you know, since they popped Joel Quenneville, to a lot of our surprise. Jeremy Colleton has this thing going in the right direction, and Patrick Kane is starting to stake a claim at MVP, and that's not common for a team that's got an 8 seed at best, or maybe even on the outside looking in. What has impressed you most about number 88 of late?
Oh, you know what? How consistent he is. I mean, he's a dynamic player. He has just been a proven point producer over time, and I think when you couple the play of Kane with somebody like Jonathan Toews, you know, they lead by example, and they kind of lead in different ways. Toews does a lot of the heavy lifting, goes hard to the net, protects the puck so well in the offensive zone. I call him the meat axe in the combination. Patrick Kane is the surgical scalpel. He is, you know, he's so gifted, great shot, great skater, great puck handler, so comfortable passing on his backhand or his forehand. He sees the game and thinks the game in a really unique way. And you know what I think is probably one of his greatest assets? When he has the puck on his stick, he is so comfortable, so natural. The puck looks like an extension of him. And he really is just a marvel. Great things happen when number 88 is on the ice. And he's been really the one constant to this Blackhawks roster going all the way back to the start of the season. And now the rest of the group is starting to come to him, whether that's them just kind of yanking themselves up by their bootstraps or not, or, you know, perhaps the impact of Kane and Toews is rubbing off on the rest of the group.
Stu, do you think Patrick Kane has a shot to be league MVP?
Oh, I think so. I think so. I don't know if there's been a player more important. Take Kucherov in Tampa Bay, for example. I mean, Kucherov, I take nothing away from him. And I really think this is a guy that when we tried to resolve who is the greatest player in the game, you know, you probably need to insert a guy like that into the mix as you talk about the Crosbys and the McDavids and the way they're playing today. But Kucherov is remarkable. But he's also surrounded by, you know, a healthy cast of all-stars. Kane, on the other hand, has really, I think, done as much in a singular way to lift the status, the Western Conference rankings of these Blackhawks than any other player has done for his own individual team. He would rate right up there for me.
Stu Grimson with the NHL Network, the former Blackhawks tough guy with us on The Score with McNeil and Parkins. My crew, Grimmer, guys like, you know, our son's ages, millennials, they're looking at me like I'm on something a few weeks ago when I said, yeah, they got to get that 8 seed. Yes, I'm rooting for the 8 seed because it's the NHL, and sometimes 8 seeds can mean everything. And it always requires me to relive one of the most painful memories I had as a Blackhawks fan, and that's the 91 team of which right. You were a part that got popped in the first round by a Minnesota team that had, I think, 68 points the entire season. Weird things happen in your game.
They really do, and I'll tell you what, it's one of the great lessons of my career, you know, really as an NHLer. You cannot look past your first-round opponent. You cannot underestimate the strength of your first-round opponent. Just being able to qualify for one of the top 8 positions in your conference, that's reason enough to bring a healthy level of respect for any team you face in the first round or any round beyond that. But I will say this of myself and my Blackhawks teammates back in 91. I think we were looking way past the Minnesota North Stars. We had a remarkable regular season, and we learned our lesson very quickly. Minnesota had something going come the start of the postseason that year. They gave us a heck of a series and ultimately prevailed. Look for another example in a more recent time. The LA Kings mm-hmm. of, was it 2012?
14.
Yep. 14. Last team to qualify, but the team that was, and put quotations around this, the team to be playing perhaps their best hockey of the season once you started into the postseason, that's as much to be feared as where it is as your, you know, your ranking in your respective conference.
I have to ask you, when you bump into Blackhawks fans all over North America and they want to say, do you remember when? I'm guessing a high percentage of those hockey fans want to reflect on the St. Patrick's Day game against the Blues at the Old Barn. And before you came on here, I called up the box score for that. There was some hockey that day, but what most of us remember was the ice littered with gloves and helmets and sticks and jerseys. Parkins, there were 11 fighting penalties in this game assessed, and then the third period started, and they played 20 more minutes. Yeah. It was one of the most remarkable things I've ever seen, and I'll never forget it. And I left the building that night saying, yep, Hawks won it 6-4. I just seen the future Stanley Cup champs, and the rest was history. But I'm guessing a very large percentage of hockey fans want to talk about that game with you.
Yeah, a lot of them do. They really do. You know, anytime you lock horns with another, back then we called it the Chuck Norris Division, not the Norris Division, affectionately known as the Chuck Norris Division. Anytime you faced a Toronto, a St. Louis, a Detroit, Minnesota, It was always going to be, a battle, figuratively and literally, to come out on top. And the Blues had tough teams. You had to be built big and snarly back then if you were going to come out on top in any Norris Division matchup. And I'll tell you, the one other one I get asked about most frequently is the one we entered into our segment. The full-scale brawl, Toronto in Chicago circa, I think that was 1992, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right on the date on that. Had the chance a few weeks ago to sit three rows behind the glass at the end the Hawks were shooting at twice, and Washington Capitals, the Cup champs, were in town. And I just marvel at Tom Wilson. I know most people don't like the way he plays the game, and there are things I could do without. But that guy's a draw, man. I can't take my eyes off of him when he's on the ice. And I know Blackhawks defensemen who, when he's in the, when he's near that blue paint, feel very similarly. Do you like watching him play?
I do. I think Tom he is he's one of these players that, you know, in a game that continues to be fast, furious, and if you can play with a physical edge, you know, I think it increases the chances of being able to come out on top in a puck battle. Ultimately, you know, the outcome of any given game, I think Tom brings that physical skill set. I think I'm optimistic that he's learning to be a little bit more discerning about when he kind of lays down the hammer. But this is a guy that when he's out there for a variety of reasons, you've got to be aware of him if you're facing him on any given night, because he can pass, he can score, he can deliver a thunderous, bone-crushing hit, and if he's, you know, if the situation warrants that he shakes his gloves off, he's a very fierce competitor, one of the most feared in the league at this time in that respect as well. So, I mean, to me, he is the prototypical NHLer today, a wonderful mix of brawn and a physical, you know, skill set in terms of his ability to shoot, pass, and skate. So this is a guy that, you know, every team, you'd love to have one, and, you know, in the luxury of luxuries, have a couple of guys that were capable of playing that way. I put Wayne Simmonds in that category as well, perhaps mm-hmm. just a little, you know, further down the path in terms of the length of his career.
We're talking to Stu Grimson from the NHL Network. Watch their trade deadline coverage beginning at 7 a.m. Central Time on Monday. You could go to NHLNetwork.com for your local listings. Last question, simple question. Do you think the Hawks make the playoffs?
I do. I do. I think they do. I think there's a lot to like in these Hawks right now, and there's a lot to be feared in a team that, you know, failed to meet expectations, struggled in the early going, but, you know, had a series of changes like the change from Q to Coach Colleton, but they've caught fire. You know, there's that, I call it a sense of destiny that kind of permeates a locker room. I think your Blackhawks have it. I think they have the ability to score their way through some of the most adverse circumstances. Last night versus the Red Wings was a great example. If they can get things kind of stabilized at the goaltending position, if Seabrook can jump back into the mix, if they can, you know, maybe they make an acquisition to go out and get a, it wouldn't be a Nicholas Hjalmarsson, but somebody that plays that kind of a brand of defense, because I really think Hjalmarsson has been missing from the equation where the Blackhawks are concerned. If they can make a tweak like that, to me, your Blackhawks are a team that qualifies, and I'll tell you what, in terms of a first-round opponent, a team to be feared, because they got a lot going right now. There's a lot of swagger in the game that they play.
Great catching up, Grimmer. Thanks for the time. Continued success. And since we've been talking, both Ty Domi and Kelly Chase have texted and sent their love.
Well, all my best to my former nemesis, Chasers and Ty.
See you, bud.
Thank you.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
That's Stu Grimson from the NHL Network. The Scores NHL trade deadline coverage is sponsored by Amy Kite of Keller Williams Realty Infinity. Visit amywillsellyourhome.com. Lawrence Holmes talked to Rick Hahn last night. We did learn a few things that I think help provide more context to the conversation we'd been having. So we'll revisit that coming up on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.